God have mercy on us all.
Did I screw that up?
And you can get Listen Up for only $14.99.
I'm really excited. I've got two special people to me and Jeff as well. And we've got our guest is Bishop Mandy Muyombo, who is the resident bishop of the North Katanga area, Katanga, in Africa, which covers North Katanga, Tanganyika, I think I say that right sometimes.
Yes.
And Tanzania, which are all a part of the Congo Central Conference of the United Methodist Church, which is a very large region geographically, but also large with a lot of United Methodists. And we've had Bishop Muyombo on the podcast a couple of times to talk about the great missionary work and the outreach to the people there and how churches do what they do as United Methodists. I'm also glad Matt Russell is out preparing for a retreat this weekend. And so I asked the Reverend DeAndre Johnson to come. He's an ordained deacon in the United Methodist Church, a good friend of mine at Memorial Drive United Methodist Church. You've been on the podcast before.
I have, yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And what I thought would be interesting, because we are going to talk United Methodist stuff, this tends to be our most popular trending conversation topics. I say that jokingly, but it might be actually true.
It is.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All United Methodists all the time.
You've got a following, John.
I don't know. But DeAndre's also, as I shared with you, Bishop, is on the Commission on General Conference. Is that how they call it?
Yep.
So you're on the committee that's going to help organize, put together General Conference. So you've already had some meetings and you kind of know some things that are going on as well. So that's why I thought you'd be perfect.
Some things, not all things.
Well, no one knows everything, but to know some things nowadays is actually good.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Well, Bishop, we'll jump right into this, and thank you so much for being here. I hope your family's doing well.
They are. Thank you.
Yeah. You do great work, and you cover a very large, not only in your conferences, but in our denomination. You've been a very important voice. So I want to talk a little bit first. There was a meeting, and it showed up in the United Methodist News, a meeting of a large number of African General Conference delegates, and you all were gathering to do some work together in person, which was a very special time for you all. Tell us a little bit about, we read the articles, but kind of what went on there, what was the spirit, what was talked about, how many people were there? Just anything that you can share with us from what happened there. And it was in Tanzania, yeah. Correct?
It was. Thank you, John. Thank you, DeAndre, for inviting me and giving me this space to share. It has been a wonderful experience. Let me say that the United Methodist Africa Forum, it's a new caucus group that has been created, and I'm not a member of that group. You know, as a bishop, my role is to guide and help all United Methodists, depending on where they stand. But this is a group of United Methodists in Africa who are committed to the unity of the church, of the United Methodist Church. And they are also committed to mission. So they are organized by themselves. We, as the bishops, we received a report from them. They share with us, as the Africa College of Bishops, what they wanted to do. And we felt that they were on the right path. But of course, it is our role as Episcopal leaders to provide them with some guidance. So they were able to gather almost 190 General Conference delegates from all over Africa. So they came from all Central Conferences in Africa. And as you read the press release, all of them affirmed the necessity to keep the unity of the church.
Wow.
And this is because the United Methodist Church has done tremendous work in making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. They continue to do so, and the United Methodist Church will continue. I think people in that room felt that regardless of the challenges that the church was going through, there was a way to remain focused on mission, on making disciples of Jesus Christ. Thank you. But at the same time, invite the rest of United Methodists to probably realize that the narrative you hear about Africa trying to disaffiliate may not be the voice of Africa. Mm. Although we know that some parts of Africa, you have heard more about in the past about the Africa Initiative,
right,
which has been gathering delegates for quite some time. But this time, I think the particularity of this group is they are committed to remaining United Methodist. So that's one. And then the second piece, they felt that disaffiliation was not the way forward. They recognized the context of Africa in terms of theological stand. You may have seen the in the press release when you talk about the social principles, especially when you came to the definition of marriage. Mm-hmm. But they also realized that regionalization was the path forward that could help United Methodists live contextually and be able to maximize mission and ministries. That's what I felt in that room. And again, John, I have to emphasize, as a bishop, I'm not a member of the United Methodist Africa Forum, but at least I was invited as a host. And as you know, they chose Tanzania to be the host, and I said yes. And I was also invited to be on a panel with Bishop Berlin, Bishop Panit from the Philippines, and myself. And that particular panel was led by the Reverend Adam Hamilton from the Great Plain, from the Church of Resurrection. So that's what I can say in a nutshell.
No, that's great. So when you the one thing that just I saw an article in the UM News, and I just shared it with Jeff, and it's from the Congo, and it's about our mission together, work at eliminating measles.
Yes,
and I'm sure you're aware of that, and that
yes.
just in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and how the United Methodist Church is preparing to play a major role in that fighting that disease. So, you know, when you talk about our mission united together rather than divided and fracturing, that's just one example that was in the news this past week of the work that we do as United Methodist around the world. And I thought that's an example of what you're talking about. So you said 190 plus delegates.
Yes.
And I think the African continent has around 260 delegates maybe total.
That is correct. Yes.
So I'm not good at math, but that's got to be what 70-75%
thereabouts, yeah,
of the delegates from Africa.
Yeah.
And they are making they discussed and did these resolutions saying that they believe in unity.
Yes.
And they in unity with the United Methodist Church. They supported regionalization. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And they also reaffirmed traditional understanding of marriage, which we've talked
yes.
about before on the podcast with you, that in Africa, marriage is even done different.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from you about when you were saying, when you visited a chieftain in a tribe. I don't know if you want to share that story or not, but even the way marriages occur and take place in Africa, it can be very different contextually than here.
Yeah, yeah, it is very different. I mean, for us in Africa, actually, what we call traditional marriage, it is the priority. I mean, we do traditional marriage without even looking at the Bible. You know, it is about our customs. Our culture, like in my culture, I'm from the Luba tribe. There are requirement in terms of how I have to get married. For instance, I have no offense to women, but it is who we are. I have to bring a goat. I have to bring cooking oil. I have to pay the dollary. It takes a long time. It's about not only two individuals, but it's about two extended families coming together.
Wow. You're right.
It is only after going through that first process, then I can go to the state and have civil marriage. Mm-hmm. And then finally, if I want, then I'll go to the church and have a religious marriage. So even in our liturgy, as I said in the previous podcast, that we pastors always ask the families, have they gone through traditional marriages? Have you received what required? If that has not happened, then there's no way to proceed with religious marriage. So, and in our understanding as Africans, is marriage is between one man and one woman. Of course, mm-hmm. there are polygamous couples, but of course, we as the church have said no. Polygamy in the church will not work. And you know, something very interesting, John. At the same time we're meeting in Tanzania, that's where the Roman Catholic Church was going through this debate around benedictions. Hmm. You know, I really invite you to read that document, Fiducia Supplicante. It's a very interesting document where there's a tension between the pastoral and the doctrinal. But the African Catholic bishops have said, no, this will not apply to us because we live in a very different context. And it is similar to what the African bishops have said in the past in their statement. We have said over and over that marriage for us will continue to be consistent with our contextual cultural values. And that is why you saw with the United Methodist Africa Forum, when it came to discussing around revised social principles, they said, well, we believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. Again, this is contextual, this is cultural, and this is what people believe in.
Yeah, and it's fascinating too to me how when we talk about it in the United States of America, I don't know if the right word is objectify Africa. We think we know that Africans are just like us, just like the conservatives of us.
Right. Yeah.
And it's so lacks so much understanding of cultural difference.
Well, absolutely. Well, cultural difference and also even difference in how we understand terms. Right. Like part of what I hear you saying essentially, Bishop, is that. Speaking specifically to this context about understanding marriage, is that there's a tension that's maybe tension is not the right word. There is a yes and quality to what is part of a cultural relationship, et cetera, mm-hmm. and what is part of Christian identity. There's a sense of both of yes and.
That's right.
Right, that you add in, and you mentioned this in a document that I was looking at, a presentation about some of the regionalization conversation. Adam Walls, I think it is quoted about this indigenous principle that we hold right alongside this pilgrim principle that says we are all at once called to this local context, but then also we're called to this context of something that's beyond our individual selves, our indigenous selves as well. And so it's a both and, it's a yes and for those things.
Yes, and I think to your point, I think what I've seen in our debate is there's been a tendency to equate regionalization and homosexuality. You hear that narratives a lot. In fact, the counter argument and the push that we are receiving on the continent of Africa is this tendency of really trying to say regionalization equals homosexuality. But I think if you go back to those Central Conference delegates, and I want to give credit to Reverend Lloyd Nyarota and others, their main concerns were to say, how can we make mission and ministry effective in our various contexts?
Yeah.
I think there are values that emanate from every ethos and really help us in terms of how we can address, we can make mission effective and also ministries. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that, yes, in that particular context, then the issue of marriage is one of them. There are several other issues that we deal with. I mean, let's be honest, I've told John this. I mean, there are issues discussed at General Conference that don't make sense to the rest of the world. They are Americans, unless you're someone like me who has become a bit cross-cultural, but even the use of the terms. I'll shock you to say that in Africa, when you talk about being traditionalist, in Tanzania, you have the way they categorize religious groups. You have Muslims, about 32%. You have Christians, about 31%. And then you have another 30% of people they call traditionalists. So traditionalists in Africa are considered to be people who don't know anything about the gospel.
Right, yeah.
So you see how even the use of the term,
yes,
is different, because the community gives meaning to a certain word. The experience gives meaning. You know, so you're 100% right. So and again, regionalization, in my views, I have a colleague, Bishop Lunge from the Central Congo, who I've come to love very much because of his writing. He says that for him, he sees regionalization as an opportunity to have what he calls the Africanization of United Methodism.
Amen.
Yes. You see, because every sector of the world has given United Methodism a flavor.
Right.
I mean, I had a chance to be at Chapel Hood and to see this wonderful man, John, preaching, leading. You know what I came out with? The way he does benediction. I mean, he walks, he's going out, and he's blessing. That has been an highlight of my visit in Houston. And that's, I mean, I cannot repeat that in my context.
Right.
But this is something that is created at Chapel Hood in Houston. So, and I believe that the Holy Spirit provide diversity of thoughts, diversity of how we understand the gospel, and even diversity of how we express our faith. Hmm. And in this regard, I will argue that our faith as United Methodists is expressed differently across the world. And that's the beauty, to me, of Pentecost.
Amen.
Yeah, that's a great word. And just to piggyback on, then we're going to move on to regionalization. But, you know, we've had a lot of churches or former United Methodists that disaffiliated. And so I don't really pay that much attention to whatever's being written or said. But someone sent me something because they knew that we were friends. And it was some article, I don't even remember, but it was like a WCA or I probably shouldn't even say, but I just said, and they sent it to me, and in their write up they said a group of progressive, liberationist, centrist Africans. So they took their American labels, and they put them on the 190 plus General Conference delegates in Africa, just because they didn't like the resolutions that you passed talking about the unity of the church. So the American cultural political playbook of how Americans do. If I don't agree with you, then you're the enemy, and I'm going to call you names. I'm going to label you.
Right.
That sounds very Christ-like to me. I don't know if that works over there, but Yeah, I mean, but even these labels, I mean, like, I would imagine traditionalist means something different. These labels that they use, I guess it's written for an American audience, but I think it's interesting that that they, and I don't want to linger on that, but because we will talk at the end, I think, a little bit about what's going on the ground there in Africa. Well, let's talk a little bit about this regionalization. You've been really involved as working with the Connectional Table, as chairing that, and also working with the Standing Committee on Central Conferences. If you're not United Methodist, this is all like fancy terms and weeds and stuff. But let's talk a little bit about regionalization. You mentioned it a little bit, but give someone just a high level overview of what does that mean when we talk about this being a major part of what we're going to be dealing with at General Conference is regionalization of the United Methodist Church.
You know, one thing to consider, John, is if you read, if you go back to the 2016 Book of Discipline, in the introduction of the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters, and I think it's paragraph 2201, and this is what it says. It says that the General Conference recognizes the differences in conditions that exist in various areas of the world and that the changes taking place in those areas. So people think that this concept is new. I don't think so. I think when the church started expanding and growing, the challenge, which became an opportunity, was to say, hey, wait a minute here. Yes, United Methodist is present in so many countries, but it is being planted in places that are different in the way they express their faith, even the way they worship. The past 2 weeks, I've been meeting with my constituencies. I met with the UMW in my area. I met with the youth, the choirs. I'll just give you an example. I told them, I said, listen, when I was a student pastor in Kansas City, Missouri, if I'm invited to preach, I'll make sure that I have a 15 to 20 minute sermon with 3 bullet points: introduction, development, application. After 15 minutes, I have to be done because the Chiefs are playing.
That's right. Know your context, right?
Because if I go over 35 minutes, I'll say, hey, pastor, you took so long because there's a game. I mean, I don't know how many sermons are going to be long on Super Bowl Sunday. And also, I cannot say hallelujah, amen, all the time. If I'm in the black church, it's a different story. But I made them laugh. I said, okay, if I shout too much, they'll remind me and say, hey, can you lower your voice? Because there are folks who can have heart attack here. It was a silly example to say that, but in Africa, people expect me at least 35 minutes.
Right.
But a good sermon, I have to be maybe 40 minutes, and I have to make sure I put a bit of hallelujah, amen, you know, all of those things. So just that example, I say, if I move from one place to the other, I have to adapt. Mm-hmm. We were in Switzerland in November last year for the ordination, for the consecration of a new bishop. We're putting on robes, and I asked Bishop Strive, I said, Bishop, where's your episcopal cane? You know, how do you call it?
The crozier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, no. We don't use it here because of the history of Reformation. Because if you go back to using the crozier, then people think you are going back to the old days. And yet in our area, I mean, that's what you need. So So going back to the introduction to the Standing Committee on Central Conference Matters, that was the beginning of the discussion around regionalization that, hey, wait a minute, we need to pay attention to the contextual realities. There is no way that we can try to apply everything that is done in America somewhere else. Let's acknowledge America has been the center of United Methodism. But I can also submit that the center of gravity of United Methodism has been moving somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Isn't it a time to de-center the U.S. and provide opportunities for equal treatment, equal structures, where all the voices from other places can be heard? It pains me, John, to see how these labels have divided the church in America. Can Africa be that prophetic voice to say, you are now living in camps?
Yeah.
Liberal, centrist, progressive, compatibilist, and there are so many acronyms that are coming up. Because we don't have those words in our languages. I do not know how I can explain it to my people in my area, the difference between a centrist and a liberal. But we acknowledge that this is what is happening in the U.S. So the worldwide nature of the United Methodist Church requires us now to pay attention to the contextual realities of every place and see how that can impact United Methodism.
Do you feel, since you are cross-cultural, having been educated in the United States and have been here, do you feel and sense that a lot of what's happening, where there is some dissension in the African United Methodist Church, do you feel that a lot of that has been imported from the United States political, cultural baggage and it's trying to be pushed in, or is this something that's uniquely African? Because as we know, there may be some United Methodists in Africa who don't want to remain United Methodist. I mean,
that is true. Yes.
So do you see that as something that's uniquely happening and as an African conversation, or do you feel or sense, and do others feel and sense, that there's been a lot of infiltration or infusion of American politics, American cultural, American issues that's trying to flavor that? I don't know if that's the best way to answer ask the question.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Is the American influence undue? Is it too heavy in some of that?
Well, the first statement I would say is I love America. So I love America very much. But I have to say that when did Africa become important in the discussion in this church? Hmm. It is when Africa started having more votes at General Conference. You know, using the American politics, you will say that African votes have become swing votes at the General Conference.
Yeah.
That because of the numbers, now almost 276 or 78, with 862 delegates, then each group in America has worked so hard to create proxy groups in Africa, you know, and say, okay, I want to make sure that I have some African delegates with me who can support the legislation, my agenda. And I have to give credit to the WCA. They've done a good job in the past. They build relationships When they came, people thought they came from missional interests. But later on, I think it became clear that it was a way for them to make sure that their agenda was carried by Africans. So to the extent that today, yes, John, your answer is yes. I think the division that is experienced in America is now being exported to Africa and trying to put Africa against each other. And I think those are the kind of things personally I'm resisting. And I don't think it is healthy. I don't think it is helpful. Let's talk about regionalization, for instance. I read the Transitional Book of Discipline of the Global Methodist Church. I found out that in paragraph 609 of the Transitional Book of Discipline of the Global Methodist Church, it says that they may create regional conferences for the same reasons that are being put forward now. But when you read the comment about regionalization and you put that in dialogue with what is in the discipline of the Global Methodist Church, then, you know, as a theologian, I ask myself, so I do not see any difference between the regionalization that is being proposed in the Transitional Book of Discipline and the one that's being discussed to be proposed at the General Conference of the United Methodist Church. Then what you find yourself is you realize that the issue is somewhere else. I think the issue is about money, power, and control. How do I control African delegates so that they will vote for what I want? And I think this is where I believe that we have lost it. But I think there are African Methodists who are going to leave, but I would probably say not many. I can say that the majority are going to stay, because on the other side, there is a statement to say we have to make sure we are global. We have to make sure we have churches outside of Africa.
It's kind of like in Jurassic Park. He goes, so will there be any dinosaurs on this dinosaur ride? And so it's like, will there be like any global churches in this global church?
Right.
Yes.
I think it's funny. Like, it's cute, Bishop, that you think that reading about American division in politics, that there wouldn't be any hypocrisy or lack of integrity or lack of honesty. And I mean, this is kind of the norm now, that even if you have the same ideas,
that's right.
If the other team has the same idea, then all of a sudden theirs is the devil and evil, and mine's different, even though it's the same. This is just how we do it. We're really good at that. We're getting better at it every day.
So. Unfortunately.
Yeah, I used to think that it was pretty obvious for people if you say, hey, 2 + 2 = 4. And I used to think everybody gets that. And I just don't assume that anymore nowadays. So, it's just unfortunate to me when we talk about colonization, right? The colonizing principle of allowing Africans to speak and have a say in how their context of ministry functions. And then for people over here to say, no, they're against regionalization. They're fighting regionalization because they're saying that's colonialistic. And I don't understand how elevating the United Methodist Church in Africa, allowing Africans to speak into their context and make their decisions for their context, that seems to be not, like that's the reverse or the opposite of a colonialistic thing, which the church has been guilty of.
Right.
Our entire existence.
Yeah.
And I really love what you say about the Africanization of the United Methodist Church, because we need something. We need some help over here in the United States of America. So maybe we could learn like a lot of good stuff from our brothers and sisters if we became equal partners rather than, hey, you come 13 or 14 days to General Conference and sit over there on the side for 12 days while we talk about United States stuff. let us hear from you. Like when you talk about Ubuntu, right? Did I say it right?
Yes.
This understanding of the value of unity is so scriptural to me. And yet, I see that when you have 70%+ of these delegates who say, we're going to be united together, United Methodists, but we're going to be united as Christians and not divide the church so that we can be more effective for mission and ministry. That seems to align with Jesus and Paul,
right,
to me.
Yes.
Anything else on the regionalization? DeAndre, any questions for
Bishop? I'd like to hear you tease out a little more. You mentioned for regionalization to help provide a mechanism, really, or structure by which every voice of the church will have equal weight and value, right, around
right.
the table.
Yes.
For as you understand it, particularly out of your own context, what might be, say, two or three tangible aspects that you would point to say, here's what regionalization could enable for us in order to realize that equanimity of weight and voice in the church.
Well, this is a great question. I think let me say that America should be proud of the mission work that you did in Africa and other places in the world. Mm. It's like you have a child who is now grown up. You know, our grown-up child, sometimes as parents, we don't want our children to tell them things we don't want to hear. We think that we are the one who should give lessons all the time.
Yeah.
Well, as the parents get older, then they become the children, and the children are actually the grown-ups.
So I think you really, what you see in Africa, it is a result of your prayers, of your praises, of your finances. You have worked hard for us to be where we are. I mean, my example here is I could have not been where I am if it wasn't for the investment that the church did in Africa University and other places. And I'm not the only one. There are several people who have benefited from the education that United Methodists across the world rally together and build schools. So I always look at myself as a product of mission. You know, I would say I'm the return of your investment.
Amen.
But at the same time, am I the right person to tell you what to do? I think that's where it becomes a very bitter tablet or medicine to swallow. I think Africa is looking for some kind of autonomy, theological autonomy. I mean, even in terms of governance, we have stayed a church that was very U.S.-centered. If America coughs, the rest of the United Methodist has to cough as well. It is positive, but it doesn't empower sometimes. I think regionalization will give us an opportunity to look into our assets, look into our talent, and see how we can also invest in our own mission program, invest in our own ministries, but at the same time remain authentic to who we are without compromising our identity as Africans. So that's one example. I'm looking at that's where regionalization talks a lot about a post-colonial approach to doing church, a post-colonial approach to leading the church. Even the understanding of evangelism, of mission, so the Africanization of United Methodism really gives us an opportunity to remain well connected, but also dig into our own resources, our own values, and uplift them and share those with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's probably one area. So I'll emphasize on decolonization, and I will emphasize on a sense of autonomy. You know, I've said if I believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, it doesn't mean that I hate the other people, but it doesn't mean that I cannot be in relationship. It doesn't mean that I cannot be engaged in mission with other people, but I'm only saying that this is what is authentic of who I am as an African with a sense of convicted humility.
Yeah.
And there is no theology which is above the other. I think John and I have spoken in the previous podcast about contextual theology. But also give us a chance to come to the table and say, can you also learn from us? Even if we are your grown-up children.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there will be a lot of going to be continued conversations as we lead up to the United Methodist General Conference, which happens in April.
Get ready.
Charlotte, which you've been, and you're going to put on a party. You're going to help throw the party, right?
We'll throw a big party for you.
Great.
Balloons.
All right.
Confetti.
Nice.
Get ready.
I'm just still stuck, Jeff, on Bishop Muyumbo. So when you got married, you took a goat and some oil and a dowry. I think when I first visited my in-laws, I think I took them a fruitcake. But I didn't have to pay
it's
a dowry.
A little different.
Yeah, I didn't have any money. I couldn't do any of that.
Yeah.
A couple of let's just all over the map questions, but I think there's some questions that people would like to hear just your thoughts. And if you may not know the answer to all these questions, you certainly can't speak for 270 delegates.
No. That
you don't even have a vote at
no.
General Conference, and you cannot submit. Well, I don't know. Can bishops submit legislation? I don't think they can. So anyway, you guys and gals, the bishops preside. They're presiding officers at General Conference, and it's the clergy and the lay that are the legislative assembly. So one of the I asked some people what questions they might have for you, and let's talk first about the question. It seems to be, and it came up, and I'm just curious. There's been talk about how it seems to be slow going to get people's credentials out or to apply for visas, or maybe people haven't sent invitations. And then I heard, and I don't know if it's true, that there may be some competing sets of delegates, like who are the voted delegates for some conferences in Africa versus some people are putting up and they may not be the voted delegates. Is that happening? Is it an issue, or are people able to get their visas in time, or what's going on over there that you sense and see that may be working it slowly? It seems to be a little slow to me.
Well, I first of all, I cannot speak for all annual conferences, but what I know is every annual conference is making an effort to make sure that their delegates, the rightful delegates who were duly elected, are the ones who represent them to the General Conference. And I think in that regard, I have to give credit to the Commission on the General Conference, even the General Conference staff, who are very clear in terms of process. There has to be a certificate of election submitted by the Secretary of the Annual Conference. There are also cases where people change status or people die. I think they are very clear in terms of how reserved will be used. And there's been constructive conversation. And I think in that regard, I think they are making sure that things are done in order so that those who will be seated will be the rightful delegates. So I trust that the annual conferences and the General Conference staff and the commission are doing that work. But when it comes to visas, I think it's a general context. I think post-COVID, pre-COVID era, it has not been easy to get visas. But I think where we are right now, I personally had a chance to engaged with the U.S. Embassy in my country. They've been very helpful. I've got 66 delegates. At this time, I can share with you that I already have over 44 delegates who have their visas already. And I'm expecting even more in the days to come. So there are issues of visas, but I'm sure the Commission and the General Conference Office is working hard to address those, whether via State Department or embassies. But you know the U.S. policy, they are very clear. When it comes to visas, it's personal. It depends on how a person is going to perform at the interview, because those interviews are they are personal, and I cannot get into that. But I know that in most cases, U.S. embassies, when somebody has the things in order, they get their visas without any problem.
Okay. Well, you know, it's I can't imagine the logistical weight of this thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to coordinate all of that.
Yeah, so one of the things that someone asked is, well, let's start with this one. People say, well, they know this, what the stakes are here in the United States with the upcoming General Conference. Americans know, or American United Methodists know what's at stake in America. But what's at stake as you think of going into General Conference and the things that we'll be dealing with? Are the stakes high in Africa? For us to have a productive General Conference, for us to pass legislation like regionalism. I mean, if regionalism didn't pass, what would that mean?
Well, I think the major challenge has been the misinformation. I think. And you know what is coming from. I think nobody expected that a group of 190 delegates would say yes to regionalization. Now, the aftermath that you see is now a lot of writings.
Yeah,
I read a lot of writings.
And name calling.
You know. And those are the things that we have to attack. I think it is not fair. I think Africans, the majority of them, are ready to remain in a church united and continue to dialogue on issues where people have differences. And I mean, I think for so long, Africans have been given a cliche. Somehow that was not what was demeaning. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who think that they own Africans in their pocket.
Yes.
I always say that Africans have brains. They are sensitive to issues that are going on. I think what I can say is with good building relationships, understanding each other, and educating all of us together is going to help us. Can I say that regionalization is the best? I would say no. It is a pathway that can allow this church to continue. But I think there are people who are deliberately trying to push Africans. And I mean, and I have to say, this issue about the Catholic, it has been a great opportunity, because I told my folks, look, the Catholics, who can defy the Pope? This was the first time that African bishops and the cardinal from Congo, who is the president of Episcopal Conferences, I had a chance to meet with him while I was in transit. They went to see the Pope. They say, yes, that will work in your context, but it will not work with us. And together they crafted the document. They have not left the church. And I don't understand why this affiliation is being pushed to Africa. Why are people going to disaffiliate in Africa? I don't get it. Because the annual conference decide on who should be ordained. The local church decide who should be married. And then our culture or our custom decide how marriage should be conducted traditionally. So we do have some kind of safeguard to keep ourselves from things we believe can affect our faith. So what I would say is this, I think if we can go in there with humility and also realize that Christ is the head of the church. Let's not forget, the primitive church was not this idealized church. It was also a church that began with huge controversies and differences. One of them was the issue of circumcision.
Right.
They felt that John, Peter, and James were good for Jerusalem. They also decided that Paul and Barnabas were good for Antioch and other areas. But they continue to be connected in mission. So I believe that people in America, in Europe, in the Philippines, if together we come with a sense of humility and say, maybe this is the way that they can help us deal with our issues. And if we can also realize that who is the head of the church is Christ. Could we all of us go at his feet and say, help us move forward?
Yeah.
That's where I am, John. I think
I
strongly believe that by coming together, we can come up with joy and with a sense of Ubuntu, a sense of community after this general conference.
So another question, and DeAndre, just jump in if you want, but I there's a couple of them on here. You mentioned disaffiliations. There's legislation to extend 2553, which allows local churches to exit. That's a very American thing. Mm-hmm. It never got implemented outside of the United States. United States culturally, though, is very divided, very hyper-individualistic. Of the 7,000 churches that did disaffiliate, mm-hmm. 50% of those churches are now independent. They're not GMC. And that really is reflective more of our culture and society.
Absolutely.
Where we just all want to be our own gods.
Pretty much.
You know, and we don't want to be submitted to an institution or any of that. But there's also been a push by those who've disaffiliated to say, you have to let African churches, you have to pass legislation to let churches and conferences disaffiliate in Africa if they want to. These are American people saying this. Yeah. And I wonder, why wouldn't Africans decide if they want to allow disaffiliations or not?
Yeah, the argument is that central conferences have been held hostage from being able to choose.
Yes. Yeah. So your thoughts on that, I mean, about continuing disaffiliation or allowing or continuing disaffiliations in central conferences. Do you have any thoughts on that, or what are people thinking? Maybe not just your thought, but like when you were there with the 190 delegates, they're talking so much about unity. It doesn't seem to make sense to me that they would then be in favor of allowing disaffiliations, but I don't know.
Well, first of all, we have to be honest. Paragraph 2553. I'm wondering if it was meant for conservative churches in America to leave the United Methodist Church.
Well, no, it was not.
It was not.
No, it was not. It says that you have an issue of conscience against the denomination. And
yes.
We haven't changed. We still have a traditional
book
of discipline, and they were traditional churches, but they just said, we're not even going to ask you what your issue of conscience are. If you want to leave, you can leave. It never qualified.
Yeah. It's never qualified. And then currently, any annual conference outside the U.S. can leave or can become autonomous
right.
Methodist Church. paragraph 5727374. But it is interesting that in that particular disciplinary provision, if you decide to become autonomous affiliated, it means you can be autonomous but keep a relationship with the United Methodist Church. Depending on what kind of affiliation you have, you can even have one or two clergy and lay delegate at General Conference, as we do have relationship with churches in Latin America, mm-hmm. in Asia, and other places. One example is, I know that Russia, for the moment, I think the annual conference in Russia is in the process of becoming autonomous. So there is a process that is already in the Book of Discipline, but this is a process also which gives a window opportunity for one church to continue to have a relationship with the mother church. So if you're going to talk about this affiliation, it is again exporting what is happening in the US to the continent of Africa. Let's assume that that will happen. I don't know how much million dollars I'm going to get from, or thousands of dollars. It will not happen. Most of our churches don't make sufficient resources. But also, let's not forget, we live in different countries. Churches are registered differently in every part of the world. Things that has happened in Europe, I think in Poland or somewhere, I can't remember where there was a forced disaffiliation. Romania. Yeah. All of those things were illegal. Judicial Council say they did not happen, but it was because somebody in the U.S. pushed them to do it as they did it, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. That was harmful.
Yeah.
But I believe that there will be people in Africa who will decide to go. And I believe that the current discipline gives that opportunity for people who want to leave and leave. But I don't believe that for Africa, disaffiliation has to be the main issue.
Yeah.
The main issue for us is, how do we deal with poverty? How do we deal with health? How do we deal with issues of peace and war? And John, look at what is happening in the world around us.
Yeah.
There are so many pressing issues that the church has to address rather than addressing division.
Yeah.
All right, I just got a couple more. And one is really, really important, I think, that to get a sense of maybe your read on African delegates. So in America, again, culturally, now that a lot of disaffiliations have occurred, there will definitely be legislation and a push to remove the language in the Book of Discipline that either prohibits ordination or marriage of same-sex or LGBTQ people. And so I would imagine that will come up for a vote. And the question that was asked is, do you feel that with this unique American issue, moving for inclusion and pushing to make sure to have that voted in 2024, if that's put up for a vote, talk to me about how do the African delegations think about that? How does that work for them as they may be asked to vote something that may be against their conscience? And would that be something that might be too much? Would that be something that could cause, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Could it be?
Yeah, is it a bridge too far, so to speak? Or
is there a line there that crossed that would, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense, because there's a significant number of African delegates. It's been voted, you know, at every general conference, and it's typically always voted closer and closer to a more traditional decision. But just your thoughts on when if that comes up and people are pushing for that, what position does that put the African delegates in, and kind of what would be the outcome on that? I mean, yeah, you have a crystal ball. You can tell me what the outcome would be. But
I cannot predict, but what I can say is I think one of our major issues, John, has been we try to legislate everything. Mm-hmm. And this is where personally I would say that we really need to revisit the role of General Conference. Because I don't believe that we are going to legislate on every issue. There are certain fundamental doctrinal stand that are not easy to deal with. Again, I'm really reflecting on what I've seen from our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters. I think we also have to learn from them. I think we really need to have a serious theological conversation around our ecclesiology. How are we going to manage the tension between being pastoral and the pastoral aspect and the doctrinal aspect? I think it is fair to say that there are several constituencies that are seeking for some pastoral attention. But I'm not sure if that should necessarily touch our doctrines. I think this is probably where we, and again, when he talks about regionalization, again, that's where there are now various school of thoughts. I'll probably say, for me, we need to emphasize on the pastoral. And maybe at some point let every area deal with those issues. I want to use the word individually, but that may not mean necessarily touching the doctrinal aspect. Again, it requires 2/3 of the vote,
right.
One. Then it requires ratification by annual conferences. You see, and for me, the most difficult thing, it is not even a general conference, but it is the ratification by annual conferences. When you deal with constitution or you deal with theological task, doctrine, or you deal with social principles. What I hear in regionalization, the way I understand it, is it really helps us to allow some of these issues to be dealt regionally on a more pastoral way. Maybe my answer to your question is it will be difficult for an African to vote, for instance, the change of definition of marriage.
Correct.
Right.
It would be very difficult. I have to be honest with you. But that's why I say that we have to raise a question. Are we going to put everything to vote? Are we going to deal with everything pastorally? Are we going to legislate on every? Unfortunately, this is our system is, but I think we have come to a point where maybe we have a structure which does not address the contextual issues of the day. So I hope I was able to answer your question, John.
I really appreciate your distinctiveness between how we handle some things doctrinally, but other things need to be handled pastorally.
That's right.
And it's not that they are in opposition to each other. Mm-mm. But to handle something pastorally is to be in more relational relationship with a context and a circumstance and a people within the circumstance, within a context, right? And I think that's a very helpful distinction for us to make and to keep in mind as we think about how then shall we live together. How then shall we organize or structure ourselves together? And the way we have used legislation to mandate that, so it actually legislates out the pastoral sensibility,
yes.
which is really our primary calling more than anything else. So thank you for framing it in that way. That helps me.
And we, DeAndre, we come out of the General Conference as winners and losers. I don't feel that's the best way of coming out of General Conference. I am looking at General Conference where delegates will go and be equipped. They'll be renewed spiritually, and there'll be relationships, and have some kind of spiritual revival. And they can worship together. When you talk about pensions or insurance, right, most Africans don't get it. You know, when you talk about trust, I mean, you use those, I mean, huge nomenclature. Even the translators have a problem, but this is specific to the U.S. But what if we were to come to a general conference where we can listen to some teaching, preaching, worship, celebrating our mission work? The work that John has started doing in my Maasai community, providing water well. When I go back to my community, I see people who want water, they want to get rid of malaria. The United Methodist has done a lot of work in dealing with malaria. Look at our humanitarian crisis. The social holiness piece. I think what has been unique about the United Methodist is the emphasis on the social holiness without discarding the personal holiness movement. I do believe that we have come to a point where we need some kind of spiritual revival, spiritual renewal. We probably need to be put in a fire so that some other things will surface.
Some Pentecostal fire.
I've said this before, and I think we might have mentioned it before. I don't know, but you know, if I could. Let me preface this by saying that in the United States, there have been people who feel as if they have been excluded in their church for a long time.
Sure.
And it has been legislated in, as you said, unfortunately.
That's right.
All of these things that have excluded people have been legislated in since like 1972 or even later. And I think, you know, people would love to see those things that exclude them removed. Some may be within the two-thirds threshold, the constitutional amendments, some may only be within parts of the discipline that are 50% majority plus one threshold. I know that one of the things about regionalization revisits the, I think it's, if I can remember correctly, paragraph 31 with a new article 4 that sort of outlines what these regional conferences will be able to do.
Yes.
And it does open the door within that to allow then, once you get to that side, to establish qualifications for clergy and establish rights, ecclesial rights of marriage and burial and all these sorts of things. I would hope, and I know I will get attacked. I am equally attacked from the right and the left, just so you know, Bishop. So, but I would hope that we could come together and do regionalism, knowing that we are a different church than we were 2 years ago or
Absolutely.
A year ago. I think we are a church now that longs to see everyone included at God's table.
Yes.
And I think that means, but there's also a process of humility and deference. I think about Paul saying that the strong defer to the weak. And I don't mean that in any negative sense, but like when someone comes up and, you know, eating the meat to the idols, there's
right.
nothing wrong with it. But it really goes against their conscience, you know, the Jews. So out of love for them, don't eat the meat. And I wonder, when we get in there, can we embody that at General Conference to say, I'm not going to ask my brothers and sisters to go against something of their conscience out of love if I know that we're going to get there.
Right.
We're going to get there. And we kind of already are there. But the language is not changed.
Yeah.
And I understand that people say, well, it's got to be changed today. It should be changed 40 years ago. But I'm just, I wish we could walk through this hand in hand with a deferential humility that Paul in Corinth, you know, chapter 8, 1 Corinthians 8 and 9, where we kind of defer to one another for just a season to lift up what you're saying is such a beautiful thing. And this is where I think the Africanization of the United Methodist Church, to teach us the importance of unity in the midst of these difficult things, we have an opportunity to embody something, to embody grace and mercy and embody unity to a world. Can you imagine that the news that comes out of General Conference when we start having those conversations rather than just who wins and who loses by 51.3% versus 40, you know what I'm saying? But I've been accused of being naive sometimes. So
no, I think we have to reclaim our Christian identity. We have to reclaim our United Methodist identity. I'm not sure if reclaiming our conservative identity or liberal identity or centrist has helped. I think reclaiming our conservative or liberal or centrist has put us in camps. And also, I don't think God is a Republican or a Democrat. I think God is God.
Amen.
Amen.
People have taken stand on issues based on their political affiliations.
Yes.
Jesus Christ disappointed the zealots. You know, the zealots were expecting that he was coming to join them in their nationalistic fight. But he came with a message that embraces everybody in the community, especially the least of these. So I think being in the U.S. context, I think we must have a church where conservative are going to have a place at the table, liberal are going to have a place at the table, centrist is going to have at the table. But again, hoping that we'll reclaim our Christian identity, our United Methodist identity, rather than reclaiming our camp's identity. Thank you.
Well, DeAndre, anything else you have?
Bishop, thank you for sharing with us and for teaching us what it might mean to live in to imagine a church and a world where we are in greater parity and in greater solidarity with each other for the sake of the kingdom.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, there's what they call it, the manifest versus the latent. It's like we are a very different church now in the United Methodist Church than we were a year, 2 years ago.
Right.
And our book of discipline may take a little time to catch up to reflect of who we are now.
That's right.
But
That's right. But
we can't say, well, if the book of discipline doesn't change, then we are different.
That's right. That's right.
We are a new church, and I who come from the more conservative, you know, traditional background, am one who stands up and says, everybody's welcome at God's table.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is welcome at God's table, and everybody's welcome in this church, and that's what I think the church is working towards. That's what we're working toward. That's where we
Absolutely.
Are now. So I would hope and pray that as we go into that, we could really have that pastoral mindset.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good word for us, Bishop. I really appreciate you being here with us. I always appreciate you. I took you over time, but so much good stuff, and I always like to be faithful to kind of hold you to 1 hour, but we went a little long. It's okay.
It was fun.
And if I don't talk to you before or see you before, I'll see you in Charlotte, North Carolina.
There we go.
With DeAndre.
Yeah, thank you.
All right,
God
brother.
Bless you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, we
God
love you. Bishop. Be safe, okay?
Take care.
Love you too.
All right, bye-bye. What's your first gut reflection? I mean, as we talk with Bishop Miyombo and kind of your thoughts, DeAndre's.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, hopeful. I mean, Bishop Miyombo, he helps to paint a picture of what the church can really look like, even out of its disagreements, right? And the divisions that really seem to be way more U.S. centric than we are led to believe. Right. For sure, our sisters and brothers in different contexts may think a little differently than our U.S. context does on certain things, particularly, say, how we might be in ministry with LGBTQIA persons. But that doesn't, what's clear for him is that doesn't really divide us, right? Mm-hmm. And that there's a desire for greater autonomy to the degree that every voice has equal weight at the table. And it's clear that our history to this point, not not all the voices have equal weight at the table. So let's bring everybody to the table and say your voice matters too.
Yeah. He's just, man, I love that dude. He's smart. He loves what he does. He can help us to understand what's going on. I just really troubles me when I hear American caucus groups. And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about that now, I'm talking about people who are gone now.
Right.
I mean, it kind of feels like, they're still talking about us a lot. But every time I bring something they say or do up, I'm like, why am I talking about them?
Yeah.
They're not United Methodist.
Well,
this is like, we're going to figure this. And I think they feel like they're advocating. Here's the hot of the haughtiness. Uh-huh. They feel like they're standing up and defending their brothers and sisters in Africa. You know what? That's the most colonialistic thing I can ever hear, to try to self-righteously. They're going to be fine. As he said, you know,
that's right.
There's already the conference in Russia's already decided to be autonomous affiliated. I have heard rumors, and I have no idea, that maybe the Philippines have talked about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They already have the opportunity to make a decision to have a different relationship that is a little more removed and gives them protection. But the regionalization allows them to remain and gives them that same cultural or contextual flexibility while remaining fully a part of the church together. So that, to me, like, that's a decision that we're all going to make together, what kind of church we're going to be. But then when it comes to like what's going to happen in Africa, I'm like, come on, dude, just keep your mouth shut.
Right.
And let the Africans, because every time you say what should happen over there, what do you think they're not smart enough to like be able to figure out what they want to do?
That's exactly right. You know, there's
this is so American.
So it's such an American
so
pride.
Can I just say white evangelical Christian American?
All of that. Yes, all of that.
Which
right?
when
let
I say
me tell you
and
what,
when I
what
say
you're
evangelical,
think.
I don't mean theological. I mean crassly culturally
political
evangelical.
Yes.
It's just,
there's a lot of icky factor with it.
Yeah, it's just, I love this country. But man, sometimes I think we have lost our damn minds.
Well, you know, the Lord is still working on us. He ain't through with us yet. So
yeah, that's true.
But, you know, I love what Bishop Monday says in terms of maybe the United Methodist Church can be, what's the word to use, Africanized or...
The Africanization of the United Methodist.
Yeah. You know,
I'd much rather have a lot of that cultural influence than what we got going on over here sometimes.
You know, I'm just saying, it'll make everything a lot more colorful.
Well, and teaching churches again to not be about politics and culture wars, but to teach churches to be about Jesus.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Did we forget about that?
We did.
Right.
We did.
And marriage would be more interesting too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bringing the goat.
Oh, bringing the goat and the oil.
Well, so Jeff, when you finally find the right girl and you go to the house, you a goat, some oil, and the dowry.
Absolutely.
It's about to go down.
I'm going to know when I see Jeff when I come in the studio, there's a goat tied up there. I was like, so you found her.
Hey, can we shout out y'all's podcast too? Can you just tell people how to find that, what it's called?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So me and my co-conspirator, Michael Jarbo, who's been on this podcast
before,
right? We have a podcast we call Work It Out, where we take some of the things that are happening in the news and put it alongside some scripture and theology, and we just work it out. I mean, more or less, it's two guys just talking.
Just yakking.
Yeah.
With fear and trembling, working it out.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So you can find it anywhere you find your podcasts. And you can find that and along with this lovely podcast. And you can hit all the like, subscribe buttons.
Yes, subscribe, like,
there you
share.
Go.
Well, I also think this is going to be important. When we do these episodes around the United Methodist Church, when we put that out there specifically and let people know, there are a lot of people that tune in to listen because, you know, and one of the things I thought we started this out not to be about that, but it's become a very good tool to help people, because not everyone's able to sit down and have a conversation
That's
with
right.
a Bishop Muyumbo
yeah.
or a Bishop Scott Jones or a Bishop Harvey or anyone that we talk to as we talk about the denominational thing. So it gives anyone anywhere access to say, okay, I read this stuff about what's going on in Africa. Why don't I actually listen to the guys over yeah. there and who just got back from this conference to tell us? I think that's helpful. I was a history major, so we always had a primary source material.
Well, and that's right? what I was just going to say. Like, sometimes our culture leans into the soundbite news sources and even soundbite theology. And so providing a space, and I thank you for this, providing a space where you can get to the primary source. And all right, so let's hear from somebody who's on the ground, right, to talk about, so what does this mean? What does this look like? What are you thinking? What are you hearing, et cetera, as yeah. opposed to just going off of the sound bites and any old pundit can write some blog post.
Well, they do it all the time.
Well, they do it all the time.
You got a UMC, a little advocacy newsletter, and a WCA one, and God bless their hearts. they just are actually, yeah, I don't think they realize this. They're only talking to each other.
Yeah.
Nobody else is really, I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just,
yeah,
I'm,
yeah.
in Christian love.
In Christian love.
Every article that somebody sends me, it's like, there's just, well, they just wrote blah, 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 but they're liars and schemers and fraud. Well, they just wrote blah, 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 and they're just out for raising the money. But then they ask at the end, hey, send us the money.
Right.
I'm like, gosh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
like the Taylor Swift song. She goes, I look in the sun, but never in the mirror.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how our politic is right now anyway, such that there is this, that it leaves this question, the same question Pilate asked, right? What is truth? And you really have to use some good spiritual discernment and some practical common sense to get to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I appreciate you being here, taking time to do this with me. It's much more fun to have somebody here.
Glad to do it, man. Thanks for asking.
Well, thank you. So we have a way of signing off where we just say our names and then we check out. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, I'm John Stevens.
I'm DeAndre Johnson.
And this is Pod Have Mercy.